As an example, every May we hear about graduations around the country where someone, maybe a valedictorian or someone, got up and quotes a Bible verse or has the audacity to pray in a public setting. And, you know, liberals scream that, you know, we're violating the separation of church and state. But is that what the Constitution says? It's interesting. The sheriff's office or the office in Texas that hangs a copy or tried to hang a copy of the Ten Commandments on the wall of, I believe it's the police station or maybe it was a government building of some kind, and everybody screams bloody murder about that. And is that what the Constitution says? Actually, the Bill of Rights does not state what rights we have, but the Bill of Rights actually states the restrictions that are placed on the government so that it cannot infringe upon our God-given freedoms. Now, that's news to some people, but that's exactly what the Bill of Rights does. It actually puts restrictions on the government. It does not give us rights. It assumes we have these God-given rights, and it puts restrictions on the government. So it's much less a document stating what citizens can do, but what much more of what clearly states what a government cannot do. And I want to read to you just the first part of the First Amendment so that we are very clear on what it says. It says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So that seems to say that I'm free to practice my religion, and it doesn't need to talk anything about a wall of separation. In fact, you will not find separation of church and state in the Constitution. That's something that a few men have talked about and written about, but it never appears in our Constitution. But so this is the chief cornerstone. That's the very first amendment, the very first two phrases in the First Amendment. After that, we have the third phrase is, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. So that's the third or fourth. And as I mentioned, you know, and I'll use the term liberalism, worships at the feet of freedom of the press and freedom of speech. And yet, that's third or fourth. What the first thing was is that Congress shall not prohibit the free exercise of our religion. And so that's a complete twist of what we've been taught and what the media tells us that amendment says. But Baptists were sowing the seeds for centuries of religious freedom. It is the cornerstone of our nation. It's the chief cornerstone. In fact, one of the major reasons that Europeans came to our country was for religious freedom. It was the first and foremost reason. There were other reasons later. But this is the reason that Europeans left their homeland or were forced to leave their homelands and came to this land because of the promise of religious freedom. And I look back, and you know, we were an English colony, so much of our law and much of the way we practice our government is based upon English law. And to look back, so the seeds were sown back in England 400 years ago. Thomas Helway, who was a Baptist pastor in London, in early 1600. He publicly advocated religious freedom. In England, it was King James I at that time, but he was not only the head of the government, but he was the head of the Church of England. So he was the head of both the religious, the church, and also the state. And Helway's insisted that the king had no authority over the spiritual dimensions in life, and he sent a king a copy of his newly published book that he had written. And with an added bonus, he handwrote on the book, he said, "The king," for the king to see, "the king is a mortal man, not God." And that didn't sit well with King James. He threw him in prison, and Helway's died in prison because of his stand. And but this is one of the very first public things we know in England of a Baptist trying to influence and trying to promote religious freedom. Roger Williams, a few years later in our country, he was forced to leave Massachusetts Bay Colony because the Church of England there, set up by the Puritans, was persecuting anyone except for the Congregational Church there. And he wanted the complete church-state separation. So he established the first Baptist church in the United States. He went to established actually the colony of Rhode Island and established a church there. He actually is the first one to use this term wall of separation. He wrote in one of his writings, he said, advocating a hedge or a wall separation between the garden of the church and the wilderness of the world. And later, Thomas Jefferson would use this phrase in a letter that he wrote. Again, it's never shown up in the Constitution, but Thomas Jefferson used that phrase and about a wall separation. And I don't believe, though, that neither Jefferson nor Williams meant it to be what has come to mean today. They did not mean that. But it's interesting that Baptists were at the forefront of that. And one of my favorite stories is the James Madison and John Leland story, where John Leland is a Baptist pastor in Virginia. And in Virginia, this is prior to the National Constitution, Virginia was taking steps towards religious freedom, or wanted to take steps towards religious freedom, and put that in the Constitution of Virginia. And James Madison was not winning the election. He was not going to be elected, and he needed John Leland's support. And so he met John Leland. The story is that he went to his home. We talked about this. And John Leland's wife said he's out in the woods here praying. And he went into those woods, just a dramatic moment in my mind, a history-changing moment, and met John Leland, that Baptist pastor, and promised him that if Leland would back him and for the legislature, that he would put freedom of religion in the Virginia Constitution. And Leland, who was not going to support Madison at that time, changed his mind and supported Madison. Madison was elected. They put that in the Virginia Constitution. Later, Madison is brought to the Constitutional Convention, the National Constitutional Convention, and James Madison wrote our United States Constitution and puts religious freedom in that Constitution. And historians will say that if it was not for John Leland, not only would we not have, in fact, I know one historian that says we wouldn't have the United States of America as we know it today, because it would have been divided, much like different states, kind of a loosely held together national government. But so that's a wonderful story about a Baptist preacher and his influence over James Madison. And then he actually promoted James Madison for his office. But so the challenge and the struggle continues and is far from over. And someone has said the eternal vigilance is the price of freedom, especially religious freedom. So it's not just Baptists that are promoting, you know, religious freedom. Maybe Baptists go back further than anyone else in promoting this, and maybe we understand it more clearly than some, because Baptists have paid a dear price over the years for their stand on religious freedom. But that's our eighth Baptist distinctive. And so I thought it would just be interesting to go through the eight Baptist distinctives so we can know what we believe and why we believe it. It's concerning our beliefs as Baptists. And so that is our eighth Baptist distinctive. And next week we'll get back to our regular Baptist history.